refreshments for the bond breakfast for the younger adults here, and mentioned that they were hoping to have people bring this and this and this and sweet breads. And I came at this time to say I was hoping that they would be bringing breads that are sweet. And they realized that they had done that as well. So, we have come to another transition point. Hopefully someday we will have come to 66 of these. But we are transitioning from the book of Leviticus into the book of Numbers. So if you'll find Numbers chapter 1. Let me begin by asking you a favor. For the last couple of weeks, I have taken chairs about across the last two rows and turned them around to where you couldn't sit in those and encourage you to come forward. Let me encourage you to do that without me having to turn the things around. That would be a nice thing to do. You don't have to be that far away. I'll back up a little if it makes you feel better. But it is better if you can do that. Why is the book of Genesis called Genesis? Because the word Genesis derives from the same word that means beginnings. Okay, and Genesis talks about the beginnings, the creation of things. Why is the book of Exodus called Exodus? Because Exodus means going out or leaving or coming out, and that's what the children of Israel did. They'd been in slavery in Egypt, and they came out. It's their story of the Exodus. Why is Leviticus called Leviticus? Okay. Leviticus is a collection of laws. Many of those laws are either appertaining to or would be administered by the Levites. So it derives from that. So why is Numbers called Numbers? Take a look at chapter 1, verse 2. What are they ordered? What is God ordering to be done? Numbers chapter 1, verse 2. Take a census. Take a census of who? Everybody, right? Well, yeah. Mine says the whole community of Israel. How are you supposed to count them? Mine says by clans and families. Okay, let's try to get it straight. How are the people of Israel organized in relationship? Tribes, and the tribes derived from the sons of Jacob. How many sons were there?
12.
So there's 12 tribes, right? The 12 tribes of the sons of Jacob, that's how they're organized. Within each tribe, how are they organized? How are you supposed to count them? Mine says by clans and families. What's a family? A married couple with kids. What's a clan? Group of families that's the extended family. I have a picture that was taken in the spring of 1915. In that picture, there must be 65 or 70 people, including two little babies. Taken in 1915. One of the two little babies is my mother, who died a few years ago at the age of 94. That was clan. Wasn't the whole of the clan, but it was a good part of it. Okay? So, you got to count them by clans and families. Now, I want you to be careful here. There are a few commentators who say something very interesting. They did count by clans. Because the word that's translated thousands and the word that's translated clan are very, very similar words. So later on, when they start telling you there's this many tens of thousands of people in this tribe and tens of thousands of people in this tribe, that word thousands could mean clans. In which case, maybe there would be a slightly smaller number of people. The question is whether, when our translations in English say it was 79,300, was it 79,000 or was it 79 clans and then a bunch of other people who don't fit into that category of clan because they fall in the cracks somewhat? I'm not saying which of those is right. I think you can probably trust that the numbers may be right. But there's this hint that maybe there was something a little different. But in any event, it's very interesting. They say they count by clans and families, and then this little piece comes up. Now, you're counting by clans and families. That's the word census. Take a census by clans and families. And then it says a little bit later, still in that same area, take a census of the whole community of Israelites by clans and families, comma, taking a count. They've got a different word. There's a census you take of the whole community by clans and families, but you're taking a count, and that's a count of part of that. Who are you counting?
Every male.
You're counting males. That's number one.
20 years or older, who could bear arms, who could go to war. That means older than 20 but not decrepit. Right? Older than 20 but not maimed or injured in some way. And only males. Right? So you're taking a census of everybody, but within that there's also a count that goes along. Now I'll show you that insight may actually tell us something important later on. Something important later on. Let me pause for a second. Has there been anything inspiring yet? No. We're going to go through a good part of the morning without necessarily finding inspiring parts. We've already been to the most inspiring part of the first part of Numbers. When we went to number 7 some time ago, we spent almost the whole day on that. Back when we were in Exodus, we jumped ahead to number 7 because it fit some things we were doing. So this morning we're working through some areas, and what I'm trying to do is give you context and understanding. This is called Numbers because in the book there seems to be a whole lot of times when people are being counted. This is the first one. Who's counted? The whole community, and within that census there's a specific count of the males who are 20 years or older, male 20 years or older, and able to fight. Okay. So far okay? Paul.
Just a little footnote in the study Bible of this one says, and it also could have been to demonstrate the fulfillment of the promise to Abraham that his descendants would multiply and spread.
Except the promise to Abraham, you would be able to count them. Here they are counting. Okay.
Well, my footnote also says the Levites were not counted.
Where? Yeah, and I think that's in here somewhere.
Because of their religious
Yeah, jump down to verse 47. Jump down to verse 47. What does 47 say? The Levites weren't counted. So how many tribes did they count?
12.
I'm sorry. 11. Let's take a quick rebid. How many tribes were there?
12.
Okay. And they were going to take a census by tribe, and within the census of that tribe by clans and families. And they weren't going to count the Levites. How many tribes did they count?
12.
Because if you look in the list, you will not find Joseph listed. Joseph's two sons were each given status of tribe in some parts of the Bible to come. You may see it later over in Kings or so forth. They are called half tribes, but they are treated as tribes. Joseph was given a double portion. And by taking the Levites out and counting both Manasseh and Ephraim, those are the two sons, by counting Manasseh and Ephraim, you get still 12 tribes that you count. And then there's this other group that is off to the side.
What did they call those two tribes?
They call them Manasseh and Ephraim. Yeah, they call them Manasseh and Ephraim. So you read through the list, you will not see Joseph. You'll see Manasseh and Ephraim. Later, not here. But later in the Bible, when Manasseh is mentioned, when Ephraim is mentioned, they are sometimes called half-tribes. And it's an echo back to this kind of thing. So how many tribes were there? Be careful. 12. Good. And if you take Levi out and you count the tribes, how many you got?
12.
Everybody okay?
Okay.
There's nothing that I know of, that I see in here, that's spiritually uplifting and energizing at this moment. But it is a call to some clarity about what you see.
Manasseh and Ephraim count as one tribe?
Nope, they count as two tribes. Nope, they count as two tribes, but the total number of tribes is always 12. So when you want the total number to be 12 and Levi's included, you count them as half tribes. When you want the total to be 12 and Levi's excluded, you count them as full tribes. And I'm sorry, I see some dissatisfaction here.
11 plus 2 is 13.
Let me help you a moment. The Bible says there's... No. I'm trying to help you with clarity here. I'm trying to help you here.
I'm not good at math.
They talk about 12 tribes. Sometimes they talk about 12 tribes, including Levi. When they do, Joseph counts as one. Sometimes they talk about 12 tribes when Levi is excluded, and you may not have noticed that before. This is a place where you notice it. Levi is going to begin to be excluded from certain counts. When they do, then Joseph's two sons are counted as one tribe each. So it's not true to call them a half tribe because they aren't always. Okay?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Why is it so important that it always equals 12?
I don't know. There is something about the number 3 that speaks of the divine in the way that the Hebrew mind thought of numbers. There's something about the number 4 that speaks to the created order. The 4 winds, the 4 corners of the earth. Those are all echoes of that. If you put those two numbers together by addition, you get 7. 7 is a complete number. Okay? So in Revelation, when you read that the number of the beast was 666, that's 3, right? But the number is 6, not 7, so that's a counterfeit or incomplete representation. I'm pretending to be God, but it's not really true. That's one way of seeing what's hiding behind those numbers. Okay, multiply those, you get 12. Multiply them again, you get 144. Multiply that by 1,000 to say so many you can't count, 144,000. Those are the numbers that you see scattered around in Scripture. And it seems to be 3 and 4 together, multiplied or added, gives you a complete number. Something short of that is incomplete. And that's the thought that's here. So it seems like the Bible record keeps it at 12. And I'm encouraging you to notice so that you won't be distracted or bothered when you finally notice, wait a minute, Levi wasn't there. Shouldn't that bring it to 11? No, because that's when... Let me pause for a minute. We lived in Baton Rouge for a year. There was a headline in the newspaper in March, I think. And the headline read, and I'm coming close to quoting, "Watch out, it's happening again." That was the headline. The story was that on Interstate 10 between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, some contractor had gotten the job to build it, and he had built it out of concrete. You know what you have to do when you build a concrete road, or at least what you had to do back then? You have to put expansion joints in between. Now, what goes into the expansion joints? Something that in the winter will expand as the concrete contracts in the cold and keep road debris and all that from getting in there. And in the summer will contract as the concrete expands with the heat of the summer. Right? That's what you have to have. The contractor put in substandard expansion joint stuff. And the result is it did not expand in the winter. Gravel and all this kind of thing got in. The roads heated up. And what had happened was a concrete slab had popped out of the ground with a Chevy Impala on top of it. The Chevy, thank goodness, was going 60 miles an hour. The Chevy Impala is going like this. Ends up sliding on its roof down the road as the big slab is like this. And the headline was, I quote, "Watch out, it's happening again." That was the headline. You know, okay, that's what happens down here. No big deal. Okay. So think of Joseph as the expansion joint. You see how I clicked these together? Wasn't that cool? If you need 12 and you've only got 11, Joseph becomes 2. If you need 12 and you got Levi in there, Joseph becomes 1. That's what's happening. I don't want to spend a whole lot more time here. I think this is enough. But I just want you to see that that's happening. So one of the things that happens here is Levi is... Now if you come down to verse 49... Okay, I would like to read verse 49 with you, and then I would like to correct you because you will read it wrong. Okay, what does verse 49 instruct Moses and the other leaders? Do not take a census of Levi. Is all of you agree? That's wrong. Because a couple of chapters from now, they're going to take census of Levi every which way you can imagine. So here's what I want you to see. Here's my translation. Yours should be close. Do not, however, take a census of the Levites, comma, or register them. Mine has a comma in the wrong place because there should be a comma there. Or register them, comma, with the other Israelites. Take out that comma phrase and it reads, do not take a census of the Levites with the other Israelites. That's what it's saying. You're going to take a census of the Levites, but don't do it here. You're going to do it over here someplace else. It doesn't say, don't take census of Levites, as if never do that. It's saying, don't take one in this census. Who's the first census of? The whole community. And within that, there is a counting of the males who are male over 20 and able to bear arms. But don't include the Levites when you do that. Everybody okay?
Can I read a different paragraph?
Of course you can, sir.
Says, only the tribe.
You're not going to disagree with me, are you?
Only the tribe of Levi you shall not list, and you shall not take a census of them among the people of Israel.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to say. Listen to that last phrase as the principal modifier. When you take a census of Levi, you do that in a separate action, separate from this. You don't lump Levi with everybody else. They're special. They're set aside. Doesn't say don't take a census of Levi. It says don't do it in the context of the census you're about to take.
But they can't be included in the fighting.
They aren't included. Well... I'm not sure.
Wonderful study Bible says the Levite priestly tribe were not included in the census because they had a more important job than fighting. They were responsible for the
tax. Okay, so yours supports that.
Yeah.
That okay.
Whatever that
was. Okay, that was the first census.
Somebody's interpretation.
That was the first census. And they go through and they count and they get tens of thousands. So 46,500 for Reuben, 59,300 for Simeon. Remember that there is this small number of commentaries who say that might mean 46 clans and 500 or 300 more people who can't be sorted that way. They sort of fall in the cracks. It's not clear exactly how to take that, but most authorities think that it's just take the straight number. You get finished and you have something approaching between 600 and 650,000 men of fighting age, not counting the Levites. Okay? All right. Everybody still okay? That takes you down to verse 49. You take a look at the remainder of the chapter, and it talks about the duties of the Levites, most of which is to take charge of the furnishings, the dwellings, and move it from place to place. They're preparing the people to march. They're getting the people ready to move. And when the people move, somebody's got to carry all the stuff. Now, there's a problem. The Levites aren't allowed to look at the stuff or carry the stuff, some of it, that they're going to carry. So that means later on, in later chapters, they're going to pause and they're going to take care of that. They're going to say, here's what the priests who are allowed to look and touch certain objects. Here's what they have to do to hide those things from view, to separate those from touch before somebody can come in and pick them up to carry. Anything uplifting so far?
Not so much.
I think not so much is the best answer. There may be something here we're not seeing all of it, but that's what we're dealing with is some of that. So, they're talking about the Levites in a separate picture. So far, okay?
The uplifting thing is verse 54, where the Israelites did all of this just as the Lord commanded Moses.
Yeah, and I was going to actually show you that later, but let's go ahead. Look at that verse. What does it say about how they did that? They did exactly, my translation uses the word exactly.
Did almost just as the Lord.
Just as yours thing says. Look at the last verse of chapter 2. What does it say? If yours said just as the first time, it probably says just as this time. Okay, mine said used the word exactly in both places. The Israelites, this is the front end of verse 34, the Israelites did exactly as the Lord had ordered Moses. Okay? Chapter 2 talks about, remember what they're getting ready for. They're getting ready for getting up and moving, going someplace. How many men of fighting age do they have? 600 to 650,000, 633,000, I think, and change is the number. Right? Now, counting everybody else who isn't a fighting age, plus counting the herds and flocks. Herds means? Cattle. Flocks means sheep and goats. Okay? If all of those people move, how wide and how long is the procession? I'm not recommending the movie, but many of you have seen it, Dances with Wolves, one of Kevin Costner's. Do you remember the moment when he's riding across the plains and he comes to some point and he's looking at the ground and the ground is all chewed up and he looks to his left and miles out to the horizon, maybe a mile wide, maybe 15 miles long, the earth is just all chewed up. What was that? A herd of buffalo had gone through. And the movie makers were trying to get you to sense what the West was like when the buffalo herds had not yet been killed off by the hunters from among the settlers from Europe. Right? Just that's
what it must have looked like. You want that many people to move without walkie-talkies, bullhorns, and other kinds of things that we have. How are you going to do it? Chapter 2 gets you set. And so what they say is, when you camp, this is chapter 2. You've read this, right? That was your assignment. All of you are good people. You all did. You did what I asked you to do, right? You were here a week or two ago. Read all of Numbers, right? Maybe you weren't here last week.
No, they weren't
here. Oh, you're lucky. Okay, how
long? You've been saying it for 2 or 3 weeks. Surely there was a week that they were here.
Chapter 2 begins with, here is how you're going to set up the camp. And when you set up the camp, the tent of meeting or the tabernacle, whatever you want to call that, that's in the middle. And we're going to put some tribes on one side, some on another, some on another, some on another. What's a good name for those four sides? East, west, north, south. And so you read through chapter 2 and it's saying, over here on the east side are these, and it begins with Judah. Judah wasn't the firstborn, but Judah was the leading tribe. It begins with Judah. Two other tribes go on that side. Three other tribes go on one of the remaining sides. Three more, until you've got all 12 tribes laid out. How many tribes are there? Three over here, three over here, three over here, three over here. Which 12 are these? These include Manasseh and Ephraim.
It does not include Levi.
Yeah, so where's Levi? They're in the middle with the ten of
meeting. Everybody knows where to come.
They're in the middle. And it says a little bit later in the chapter, now, when it's time to move, and they're going to tell you later how you know when it's time to move. When it's time to move, Judah moves first. And the two tribes that are with it move first. What does that do? That opens up a way. Which way are they going to go? They're going to go east. Because that's where they're located. And the second group is the tabernacle. And then the other three groups fall in behind that. And however long that is, that's going to be what the mark. When it's time to stop, then Judah looks like we'll go a little further than the middle and the tent of meeting comes up. That's chapter 2. Chapter 2 spends all that time talking about that, at least up to verse 30. Yeah, up to verse 34, which is the end of that. Okay, anything inspiring so far? Not so much. Not so much. Other than verse 54 and verse 34. Because there is something here. These people, for a little while, they're doing exactly what they're being told to do. They are obeying. We ended our service this morning with the song, Trust and Obey. There's no other way. And they're, for a little while, doing that. All right?
Bill, on the upside, it is more interesting.
Oh, chapter 7 is fascinating. Chapter 7 is fascinating. Yes, Philip Rosenbaum called it the king of the boring parts, but it's still fascinating. Okay, chapter 3. Chapter 3. I'd like you to take a look at verse 15. What does it say? Take a census of? Levi. Right? By families and clans. Notice, for some reason in my translation, it reverses the two. The other said clans and families. I don't know why. All the males must be counted who are?
Month
old or older. Anything about military service, able to bear arms? Decrepit, get you out?
No.
No. Why 1 month? This is a recognition of brutal and harsh reality.
To see if they live.
If they live past the first month, you can die in childbirth or shortly thereafter. My father was one of nine, but I only knew eight. One was a twin, but the other twin died in that first 2 weeks, and that this happened. So 1 month old and older. Why? I don't know. I don't know. It's different. 1 month and older. The others, they're counting. Count them all. But within that, I don't know if it's the same thing. I'm putting an interpretation off. Count them all, but then make sure you go back and count the fighting strength within. God says, when you do this. With Levi, just count. They're still counting males as far as I can tell. But 1 month or older, don't worry about old age, don't worry about young age, just 1 month and older. Everybody still okay? All right. Would you please, that was verse 15, right? Verse 16, at the Lord's word, Moses took a census of them as the Lord had ordered. These were the names of Levi's sons. What are the names? Gershon, Kohath, and Merari.
Verse 18 gives the names of Gershon's sons by their clans and so forth and so forth. And it talks about verse 22, it gives their number, right? So if you notice what they're doing, they're counting clans within that. They're giving you the total numbers. They're doing all the things you saw in the other, except they're doing it for a slightly different age range, 1 month up and never mind anything else. And then in verse 25 and 26, it gives the duties of that group. How many groups are there within Levi? I don't think there's anything uplifting here, but we're just getting the details. There's three groups, and this is the first group. Verse 25 and 26 gives you their duties. Right? And you can read those. You can see those. They have the responsibility for the tent and its covering, the screens for the entrance, the curtains, the screens, and the cords that are required to hold all those things up. So they're taking down the tent materials. There's two more. Verse 28 gives you the count for the second group. And then starting at verse 31, and I think it's only 31, it gives you the duties of that second group. What's the duties of the second group? They're carrying the precious things from inside the dwelling. They're carrying the Ark of the Covenant, the things they can't see and can't touch. They're carrying the little altar of incense. They're carrying the lampstand. All the things they cannot see and cannot touch. So that means later on there's got to be provision for protecting them against God's anger for touching the holy things. If you take a look at verse 33 and 34, this is the third group. Gives the count. And then down at verse 36 and 37, gives their job. What's their job? One carries the tent, one carries the poles, one carries the stuff inside. That's not quite right, but it's pretty close. One carries the tent, one carries the tent poles, and one carries the stuff inside. That's what the three groups are doing. So far, okay? And if you look, these are situated around... So the three groups of Levites are situated around where the tent of dwelling when they're in camp, and Moses and the priests, Aaron and his sons, are set on the fourth side. So it's sort of like a little four inside, right? Gives a total in verse 39, and for reasons that you'll see in just a moment, although it is not an uplifting and an energizing thing, we need the number. What's the total number that they counted? Now this would be males a month old, a month and up. 22,000. Okay, 22,000, as they say, exactly. All right, verse 40, who are they taking the census of now? The book is called Numbers because they count and count and count and count, but they're counting different groups. You count the whole of the community within them, count the fighting men, you then count all of Levi and within them, you count all the males, month old and older. Now you're coming back and doing a third count. Verse 40, who are you counting?
Firstborn males.
The firstborn of Israel. And among that, you're counting the firstborn males. Now, I don't know if they're counting the firstborn females or not. And I think it hints that you're going to count some of the animals as well. But here's what I want you to see. Verse 41. I did it one way in the first hour. I'm doing it slightly differently here. Verse 40, you will count the firstborn of the Israelites, all the males from the age 1 month and older. Now, notice that's not going to be the same number that you got before. But only firstborn. You will then present the Levites to me, the Lord says, instead of Israel. And similarly, you will present the Levites' cattle instead of the firstborn cattle of the Israelites. Remember what God's rules were about sacrifice? Something special about the firstborn, first fruits of the harvest, firstborn of the cattle. There's something special. God reserves those, right? Remember Passover back in Egypt? The real one, not the commemoration later, but that one. What was it? The firstborn died. Everything except if the blood had been shed and the firstborn had been redeemed. Remember that? God says the firstborn belongs to me. So what's happening in here, I don't see this as spiritually uplifting, but I'm trying to get you to see the sense of this. God is saying the firstborn of Israel belongs to me. Instead of the firstborn of Israel, I'm taking the Levites. Got it? I get the firstborn of Israel, but I'm going to take the Levites instead. How many Levites of the ages that they counted? 22,000.
How many firstborn?
What do you mean by te? You mean they belong to him?
They belong to him in a special, specific way. And he says, I am substituting. Instead of taking the firstborn of Israel, I'm going to take all of the Levites. All the Levites. How many Levites? This is not spiritually uplifting, but it's a detail. I don't want you distracted later when you try to wade through this stuff. 22,000 Levites. How many firstborn of Israel? 22,273. And God says, okay, we're going to do a one-to-one substitution. That takes care of 22,000. You've got 273 left over. You're going to have to do something to redeem those. You're going to redeem those by a gift of money to the treasury. And that's what the rest of the chapter talks about.
Or the rest of this section. Did you read it? Verse 49, Moses took the ransom money for the extra ones, unransomed by the Levites. Took the money for the firstborn of the Israelites, 1,365 shekels by the sanctuary shekel, and Moses handed over their ransom money to Aaron and his sons at the Lord's bidding, as the Lord had ordered Moses. And that's the end of verse of chapter 3. Very interesting. God has now redeemed the firstborn of Israel with the Levites. What's then going to happen with the Levites? They become a special property of God's. They are a special people of God's, set aside for special service. And therefore, they're not counted in the normal grouping. Everybody okay?
It is pretty interesting that they were that organized. That's what they want every single count. Wonder how they did it. Like, they must have had some kind of system or somebody recording it.
And it talks in one place about writing a list and all this kind of stuff. That's from what I know, that's what happened. They had.
Maybe people even felt more connected as a community and special that each one of them counted.
My name is in the book. I think there is something uplifting sort of hiding there. Okay, we now come to chapter 4. What does chapter 4 do? Chapter 4 essentially does what chapter 3 does, except it does it in a great deal more detail. And that's not quite right, because what happens is they retake the census of those three groups of Levi. All of chapter 4 is talking about Levi. Where it talks about their duties, they got one verse or two verses out of chapter 3. Now they get whole huge sections. Starting at about verse 5 and going through verse 20, that's where they take care of what are the priests going to do so that the people who are carrying the things won't incur death from God for having looked at or touched holy things. All that's taken care of. So duties for the Levites, which chapter 3 was beginning, great deal more detail. And then starting at verse 21, it specifically talks about the three subgroups in Levi, and you take another census. I think it may be part of the first one, but it is different enough. So please take a look at verse 22 and 23. And Mark, as you look at 22 and 23, tell me why I hesitated about talking about military service. What does it say? This is the first census. This is the census of the Gershonites. This is the first group of Levi. Who are they supposed to count in this sort of sub-census, if you will?
From 30 to 50 years of age, who come to serve and work at the tent of meeting.
Okay, my translation says, all the men between 30 and 50 years of age eligible for military service who will have their duties in the tent of meeting. Those of you, do you know something about the Mennonites and the Quakers in World War II? World War I? I know a little more about World War II. You know what happened? They were pacifists. They were conscientious objectors, but they did not withhold themselves from military service. What did they do? They became medics. So they became other kinds of things. One of those is an extremely close friend of mine. He's up in years now. He told me one time, and when he did, he said, you're the first person I've ever told this to. He said, I was on Okinawa. I was in a foxhole, and the Japanese overrun us. They killed the other guy in the foxhole with me. I picked up a rifle, and I shot and killed the Japanese. I've never told anybody else that. I was a conscientious objector. He had come out of one of those backgrounds, and he said, I've carried that shame the rest of my life, but if I had not done that, I'd be dead today. But that's it. So if you listen, what I'm hearing is, okay, these guys aren't going to do military service, but they're going to do the military service work in the tent of meeting. That's the way mine reads it, and I think that's close to right. Mark, yours read a little different, it sounded like. But it's an interesting thing. So there's a period of service. What's this period? What's the age that you're looking at now?
30 to 50.
That's different from what we've seen before. And that seems to be the period of time in which they do their service. So you think of apprenticeships and learning and all this kind of stuff, and then a 20-year period of work. It was interesting that Wayne's up for 20 years with Martin Air on October, right? You said that already today, and I thought about this. When you read, there's a much more detail about what the Gershonites are going to do. Verse 29 does the same thing for the second group. Verse 34 does the same thing for the third group. And again, gives much, much more detail than what was given in chapter 3. So it looks like a sub-census there. And you sort of get a hint of that for the first one. So all through the first four or five chapters, count, 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 count. What are we going to call this book? Let's call it Numbers. Everybody okay? Questions so far?
About the silver. The gold that they had for the calf was from the plunder. The silver's from the plunder too? And how is it dispersed among the people that they have?
I have no idea what you're looking at to say that.
Oh, when we were talking about the ransom.
Yeah, I'm assuming there's some kind of barter system or camp stores or something like that where you can go and do. I don't know exactly how that works, but yes, that's taken from them. Okay, now if you're picking this up, what you're seeing is you're seeing very specific things that really focus in on the Levites. It almost seems like this ought to be the extension of Leviticus because it's coming so closely to them. But because of all the counting, they make a split, call it Numbers. Starting at chapter 5, chapter 5 is almost like a summary of some other things that, well, we haven't talked about these yet, but we better get them in somewhere. And I don't mean to belittle this. I mean, instead, just to be descriptive. So chapter 5 and maybe chapter 6 deal that way. And I want to just walk you through what's here. Anything really inspiring and uplifting yet? Not so much. Maybe verse 54, maybe verse 34. So here goes chapter 5. Chapter 5, the first four verses. Here's what you do when somebody shows up with leprosy, or they say it, a discharge, maybe an oozing wound or something like that, right? Here's what you do in that case. You expel them from the camp. They stay outside the camp. You don't kill them. You don't do it. But they can't mingle with the people, right? Verse 5 to verse 10 is the second part. And what you're dealing with here is, what do you do when somebody does something that requires restitution? Somebody has wronged somebody else, and you need to have some restitution. And what's provided for is, here's how you make restitution. And it says very clearly in verse 7, the tail end of verse 7 says, and if you do this, there's a monetary fine involved, which is the total amount plus 20% that was wronged, and the money goes to whoever was wronged. So you sort of hear the beginning of a court system there for that part. But that's for restitution. From there through the rest of chapter 5, it deals with a single topic, all the way from verse 11 to verse 31. It is a topic I don't particularly want to deal with. But we're trying to go through the Bible a little bit at a time, so we have to do this. This is, how do you deal with a marriage in which one partner is suspicious of unfaithfulness on the other, on the part of the other, and it only goes one way? Which way? If the husband has suspicions of the wife, here's what you do. And it's totally silent on what happens if the suspicions run the other way. That strikes me as wrong, but that's because I'm looking from this perspective back. Women were considered property or almost quasi-property, so maybe that's part of it. But there's a long list of what's in there. Part of it is trial by almost trial by poison, it looks like, which I don't, again, understand fully. But there's a section in there. That's what it deals with. Okay? That takes us through chapter 5, and you'll notice I'm not dwelling there. I'm hoping you will choose to follow my lead on that. Right? Now you come to chapter 6, and chapter 6 starts to get interesting. It's still sort of picking up things that need to be said about the laws and other kinds of things that haven't been said yet. It's still in that context, but it's a little more interesting. What's this one about? The vow of the Nazarite. It is not Nazi. Okay? It's Nazarite. Does everybody agree? It is not coming from the same place that the word Nazi came from. This is not the same thing at all. This is something very, very different. Number two, there is a hymn that says, I stand amazed in the presence of Jesus, the Nazarene. What does Nazarene mean? Jesus was a Nazarene. What does that mean? He was from Nazareth. That's a Nazarene. This is not a Nazarene. This is a Nazarite. Everybody okay? Not a Nazi on the one side, not a Nazarene on the other side. It's a Nazarite. Everybody clear? I don't want you distracted or confused when you get into this later. Everybody still okay? Okay. Now, here's what I want you to notice first. And I did not notice this until fairly recently. Who can take the vow of the Nazarite? Verse 2, I think. Man or woman. This is one of the first things that I've spotted that is wide open to both. You take a vow of the Nazarite. Okay? I want to spend a little time making sure you see this. Before I go any further, let me ask you, do you know any Bible characters who took the vow of the Nazarite? Samson.
John the Baptist.
John the Baptist certainly did. One more. Samuel did. Except, interestingly enough, Samuel didn't exactly take the vow. Who took the vow? His mother did on his behalf. One assumes there was some kind of process in which Samuel affirmed that he was going to live under that. Right? Okay, number two. It's not clear here, but I want you to look down to verse 13. Because that's going to make it clear. Oh, goodness. I got to quit, Barbara says. Let me do this quickly. Verse 13. There is a ritual for what you do when the period of time of the vow is over. Everybody okay? It is not a, I vow and I do it the rest of my life. It is, I vow for some period of time. As far as I know, Samuel and Samson and John the Baptist, it was a lifelong, but it didn't have to be. Man or woman. The three things were, stay away from alcohol. What that said was, I am not going to indulge in a life of ease. Do not cut your hair. Samson shows us this more clearly. That is a sign of God's power at work in your life. It is, the hair is a sign of strength. Okay. And third, don't go near a corpse. This is, you're set aside for special service for God, and God is not going to touch dead things. God is working with things that are alive. Okay. Now, that's probably all I need to do. I want to end today with the blessing in verse 22 to 27. It's one of the most powerful blessings you'll see in the whole of the Bible. I have eight more I was going to share with you, but I've run out of time. We will close with this one. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, speak to Aaron and his sons and say, this is how you must bless the Israelites. You must say, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord let his face shine on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his face and bring you peace. And God says, this is how they must call down my name on the Israelites. And when they do, I will bless them. May God bless you and keep you. May he let his face shine on you and be gracious to you. May he show you his face and bring you peace. And that's a good way to end.